Chapter 8. 2 days later, Jason adjusted his breath mask and leaned against 32's Duracrete main gate, waiting for the Corduro supply shuttle. The gray dome faded toward a foggy height. Celcor couldn't afford to equip its refugees with costly envirosuits, only cheap chem suits and cumbersome rebreathers like Jason's. There were times when he'd gladly blast off again. Rhonda's offer rose back to his mind, but he rejected it. If he turned to aggression, that would betray everything he'd promised to stand for, not to mention his vision. But couldn't he fight without using the Force? On his right, the sealed end of a retracted tube-shaped cofferdam lay along one edge of a blasted-out crater. That tube could be run out to mate with a freighter's cargo hatch. 32 had been promised a load of chemical fertilizers for its hydroponics operation. Without them, the new crop of foodstuffs would wither in the tanks. Still, it didn't take a Jedi Master to realize this freighter wasn't coming. Frowning, Jason slipped into the wide gate, a modified airlock. He paused to let air currents whisk most of the crud off his clothes, sloshed his boots in a settling tub, then paced up the dome's edge to the control shed.
"It isn't coming," a deep voice rumbled.
Rhonda had positioned his belly in front of the control board. Two older humans sat cross-legged on the floor, playing a tile game. Beyond them, the view bubble looked out on the landing zone's blast crater. "Any word out of Nal Hutta?" Jason asked gently.
"The glorious jewel," Rhonda fumed, "is under remote bombardment. Missiles are bursting in her atmosphere. They are causing no damage my people's sensors can pick up from remote stations. But we know what the enemy did to Ithor."
Jason frowned. "Did your people evacuate?"
"Many of my Khajiitic had already left for Gamor and Tatooine. Rhodia, too."
Rhonda's broad slash of a mouth pulled aside.
"But now Rhodia's under attack."
Jason shook his head.
"Noble news out of Kubindi, though. Tragic, but noble."
"Oh?" Jason leaned one arm against the comboard. News from out-system was getting rare enough to tolerate listening to Rhonda relay it.
"Word is out that Kip's dozen..."
Jason clenched a hand at that name, but he didn't interrupt.
"Held off a Yuuzhan Vong attack force long enough that the Kubas got every spaceworthy ship off-planet. You cannot call that anything less than heroic."
Grandstanding came to mind, but Jason held his peace. "I thought he was over at Bethawi."
"Exactly. Anticipating their attack. He made the long trek..."
"Listen, Rhonda." Jason frowned. "I just don't admire Kip the way you do." And Kip has no patience with Hutts. But Jason didn't say that. He killed millions. Rhonda waved a stubby arm.
"Long ago. He was young."
"Well, I'm young now, and I don't approve."
"Tragic,"
Rhonda said softly.
"The way the Jedi are dividing. Supposedly Jedi protect others. I see none of that from you, Jedi Solo. Take Worth Skidder. He was a warrior."
He recited the story again. Skidder's bravery on board the Yuuzhan Vong cluster ship. Skidder's attempt to communicate with the hideous Yamisk war coordinator. Skidder dying in bitter agony, sending the rescue crew off without him. Rhonda had vowed to avenge himself on the Yuuzhan Vong, honoring Worth Skidder. Jason wondered what the young Hutt really wanted.
"As far as I can see," Rhonda concluded, "Duron is the only Jedi who truly is carrying the fight to the Yuuzhan Vong."
"That's only half true," Jason said carefully. "The Jedi based on Coruscant are working just as hard as Kip, without calling attention to themselves. No fanfares, No tricks flying into battle. Rhonda spat toward a bucket he'd placed in the room's darkest corner. The tile game players startled, then returned to their game.
How long, he rumbled, will Coruscant hold out if the Yuuzhan Vong attack?
That's the last place the fleets would let them take. But Jason had wondered the same thing. That really would be the end. And Uncle Luke had stood near Coruscant in his vision. Listen, Rhonda. Master Skywalker is right. We have to be cautious about using the Force. We have to resist anger, hate, and aggression. Those will tempt us into an evil that's just as dangerous as the Yuuzhan Vong. Rhonda grumbled in Huttese. It's right for us to gather intelligence, Jason pressed, to protect and advise others, to heal their hurts. That's the force of good, Rhonda. Kip's people, maybe they haven't slipped over to the dark side, but they're sliding. Rhonda clenched his tiny hands and puffed up to his full size.
Spare me your dark side and light side. If you're a Jedi, act like a Jedi. Or get out of the way and let other Jedi do what this war requires, to protect others.
I'm working on that, Jason insisted. Abruptly, Rhonda turned conciliatory.
Of course you are, he soothed.
But not before Jason made one more mental note about Rhonda Besadi Diori's flattery. It could turn ugly in an instant. The Hutt was a spice merchant, a manipulator.
Here is my vision, Rhonda said. My fantasies have matured, and you could find glory helping me fulfill them.
Jason rolled his eyes. Go ahead. Rhonda moistened his lips with his fat, wedge-shaped tongue.
I see myself, he said, as a pirate chieftain, wreaking havoc on the Yuuzhan Vong, with Kip Duran as my example.
Jason wondered how Kip would react to a Hutt using him as an example.
Who better to head my squadron than a Jedi? And fate has delivered a Jedi to me, one who is withdrawn from their normal operations. You see, Jason, all I need is to somehow get an influence over you, then convince you to do what I want.
Surprisingly frank, for a Hutt. There isn't a single ship here at 32 that would suit your purposes.
No,
the Hutt admitted.
But over at Gateway there are faster vessels. Ours for the taking.
No, Rhonda. I won't steal. I don't want to be a pirate. And I don't believe in your vision. I'm sorry. Now I need a Goku line. Sighing heavily, Rhonda slid away from the main comm board. Jason settled in at the ground orbit comm unit, drumming his fingers on its edge while he waited for his call to go through. He wondered if Rhonda might resort to intimidation once it grew obvious that flattery wouldn't produce what he wanted. Jason's first call raised the Duros military, as usual. The Duro Defense Force was a nervous bunch these days. Admiral Watt's comm team was on the job this morning. Negotiating the usual runaround took most of Jason's next hour. Rhonda thrust his huge head through the door three times, demanding progress reports. Waiting for Admiral Dizzlewit, Jason murmured each time. Finally, Jason talked himself far enough down the line to reach a shipping clerk who seemed willing to check records. Yes, the shuttle in question had arrived at Buru City. Corduro Shipping had taken charge of the transfer. A Corduro pilot had taken off with it, bound for Erdorf City, the smallest Duros orbital city. Stolen. I know these routing checks are inconvenient for you, Jason said tightly. You've done an incredible job getting me this much. Many thanks. He cut the connection and flicked his comlink. Dad? After several seconds, he got an answer. Find it, Junior. The Duros diverted it. Rhonda's monstrous head poked through the door again. Jason pushed his chair aside and beckoned the hut forward, still explaining. Dad, I think this would justify spending the fuel to go up and talk to them. Han had taken 32's outdated I-7 Howl Runner shuttle up to Buru twice that first week, talking to Admiral Watt. No, Han said firmly. They don't want to talk. We'll think of something. Borrow supplies from Gateway, maybe. Jason knew exactly what his dad meant when he said borrow. An unexpected transmission called Savang La away from Sunilak's Vilip choir. In that chamber, signal Vilips fashioned optical fields that showed long arcs of space, sent by Vilip's position for relay. Images from Nal Hutta showed the seeding of microbes that would reshape the scum-ridden, pestilent planet and its ghastly moon, covered with technological monstrosities, back into something fertile and lovely. Some of the organisms, bred by master shapers, would digest Nar Shaddaa's metal and transparasteel into dust that would settle into lower strata. Other microbes would break down both worlds' duracrete into sand for new soil. Still other bacteria would attack organic matter, including the hut's bloated corpses, to enrich that soil. Buried under natural terrain, the world and its moon would live again. There was also the matter of Mujmai Ainen, a lieutenant who had proposed taking Kubindi with half the usual number of coral skippers. Disgraced by the substantial evacuation of Kubindi, Ainen waited in a meditation chamber. In less than an hour, the gods would receive him. Savang La was not pleased to be called away, but the executor's report was worth hearing. Seated in the coral-lined privacy chamber, he glared at the Vilip's rendition of Nomanor's dumbfounded face.
Not one Jedi, but three?
Nomanor's eyes widened even farther. It was unusual for a War Master to repeat information.
Yes, War Master. Three have been spotted now.
The War Master drew up to his formidable height, squaring his spiked shoulders.
Not by you.
By my agents. I scrupulously avoid their presence.
Their names,
Savang ordered, relaxing.
Leia Organa Solo remains supervisor of this dome. My assistants alert me whenever she approaches the laboratory.
Your assistants approach worthiness.
I wish I could convey your compliments.
When Duro is liberated, you may offer them yourself.
The Vilip showed Nomanor's head nod in gratitude.
You honor us all. The other two Jedi came to my attention only this morning. My agents on Buru have monitored a number of out-system calls from Settlement 32. They finally identified a passenger who arrived by medical evacuation ship as Organa Solo's daughter, Jaina. Corduro's shipping reports dealing with another at 32. Jaina's brother, the cowardly Jedi who went missing from Coruscant.
Perplexed, Savang La interrupted,
Is this family in blood feud? Avoiding one another to prevent embarrassment?
I find no evidence of either. It seems possible, though almost unbelievable, even for this godless race, that the offspring have no idea of the mother's location, nor she of theirs. The coward's name...
Name me no coward. He is not worthy to be known.
Then may I offer a suggestion?
Savang La nodded.
I have developed a new organism.
Savang La frowned. Numanor fancied himself a shaper, dabbling in others' sanctified specialties.
When we need to break down these abominable domes and let in living atmosphere,
Anor continued,
it should be useful. Meanwhile, I would like to test it in the two younger Jedi's dome, Bruktuckum Nom Kanbintu.
He quoted the adage, to weaken the hinges of the enemy's fort.
Why not your own?
It would be an honorable self-immolation.
Belek Tew, War Master.
Numanor apologized, and the War Master let him continue.
This research complex serves our long-term purposes, and Jedi Organa Solo helps other workers make maximum use of resources. For that reason, this dome's destruction should be delayed.
Savang La could not fault the executor's reasoning.
Only so long as she remains ignorant of your presence. Somehow these Jedi recognize us through Uglith maskers. I have little faith that your new Gablith masker would deceive her.
Jedi magic worked without sacrifices to the Yuuzhan Vong gods, which made it almost as abominable as the infidel's technology.
The priests, he added dryly, change their minds daily. Whether the portents identify these Jedi as abominations too evil to even sacrifice, or worthy enough to offer individually, but do not encounter her in person.
I serve you with my life and death,
Numanor answered. Savang La touched his villip. Numanor's face faded, shrank, and was sucked back into the villip's interior. Savang La sat for another minute, stroking his frayed lip with a finger claw. Destroying Duro's shipcrafting facility would deny his enemies warships and materiel. Cutting their trade routes again would wreak economic havoc. And at Duro, he would make an example that the galaxy's surviving inhabitants would not dare to ignore.